I'm David Schreiner-Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Our discussion may raise some questions in your mind, and I really want to hear from you, our listeners, so connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter, and please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also mean a great deal to us if you would leave a review on iTunes to help others find our show. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Matt Curry. Matt is a highly successful entrepreneur and automotive industry expert with more than 30 years of experience. From his first job changing tires at age 15 to his current accomplishments as the best-selling author and business coach, Matt is a visionary recognized by the business community for his valuable contributions to the field and whose achievements include community and public service. One of the things about Matt is that Entrepreneur Magazine recognized his book as the number two book that every entrepreneur should have in their library, which is an awesome achievement. Another thing about Matt is that he has ADD. And there's an interesting characteristic for someone in business. And Matt is not the only one I know who has ADD. And we're going to talk a little bit about how that may have played into Matt's career and some of the challenges and successes that he's faced and accomplished along the way. So Matt, welcome to the show.
David, thank you for having me on the show. It's quite an honor. I appreciate it.
So I wonder if we could start off on how you got your business career started and a little bit about some of the ups and downs along the way.
Well, sure. So I think that's pretty accurate to be on Smashing the Plateau, because the reason why I went into business for myself is I felt like I was at a plateau. I was in the automotive business and I began at the beginning. I started changing tires and mopping floors when I was 15 and worked my way into management and did really well, ran seven different stores for three different companies and tripled the sales everywhere I went. But I realized, you know, hey, I'm not going to get any further with these big companies I was with unless I opened my own gig. So that's what I did. I think to really smash the plateau, to really break that glass ceiling, so to speak, you know, I think everybody really should consider entrepreneurship.
It's a great story. And I wondered if we could talk a little bit about a time when you were at a plateau. Looking back at that time, what were your dreams and what was the gap between what you had achieved and what your dreams were?
That's a really fascinating question, David, because when I was growing up, everybody that I knew that was successful was a business owner. I remember the guy across the street, he had his own business and he got a new Lincoln Continental every year. One of my best friends growing up, his dad had a restaurant and he always had nice cars and cool stuff. And back in the 80s, it was all about consumerism and all that. And being the youngest of seven kids, you know, we had a lot of love and my dad was very successful, but, you know, we didn't have tons of money. And I always wanted to own my own business. That's always what I wanted to do. And I believe in beginning at the beginning and learning everything. You know, if you're going to open an automotive shop or an IT company or whatever, you need to know everything about the business. And so that's what I did. I began at the beginning. I worked really, really hard to learn everything about the business. And in order to smash the plateau, you know, I felt like the only way to achieve that was to open my own business. And it worked out. You know, I started in the back of a terrible little industrial park with just four parking spots. And before we knew it, we were the number one auto repair shop in North America. So that was pretty cool.
You know, Matt, you've raised something that's really kind of interesting. Looking at people around you as examples who had achieved what you defined as success, a lot of people looking at that kind of situation would not necessarily think about the hard work that's involved to get there. What made you realize that hard work was really important, an important ingredient, and that you needed to start at the beginning understanding a business from the ground up?
Well, I was really fortunate, you know, to have amazing parents who just inspired work ethic and hard work every step along the way. I was never given allowance. If you wanted to make money when you were 7 years old, you'd go out and shovel driveways and cut grass. So that, I think, just from a family background, I was very blessed to have that. But you know, nobody's ever going to give you anything. If you want something, you got to go out and get it. You got to go out and take it, and you got to go out and work for it. And as Rory Vaden says, you got to take the stairs. You can't take the elevator. There are no shortcuts. People want shortcuts, but you got to begin at the beginning. And if you're going to be successful, and no matter what it is, and it could be multiple things, you've got to know your product. You've got to know your service. You've got to be the expert. People are coming to you, no matter what business you have, because they have a problem that they want solved. And it's your job as a professional, whether you're an employee or an entrepreneur, is to solve their problem and to make their lives better, easier, and faster, you know, and more efficient. So I think if you really take it from that perspective, you say, hey, I'm a problem solver. That's what I do. Somebody's calling me. Somebody's reaching out to me because they have a problem and they want it solved. And you can figure out how to solve that problem. You're going to achieve ultimate success.
And along the way, even with hard work and learning a business from the ground up, what are some of the times when you have hit a plateau?
I've thought a lot about this because you sent me some notes in the beginning. And the biggest thing I came up with was I would be working 60 or 70 hours a week in retail, running a tire shop or an auto repair shop for somebody else if I didn't go and open my own business. So that was the number one plateau. And to me, it wasn't a risk. It was like I knew the business and I knew success wasn't an option. It was the end all be all. But then when I achieved some type of success, like I remember when I had four stores, you know, things were really good. We had four stores and we stayed at that level for about 3 or 4 years. And I was golfing 4 days a week. You know, I went from working 800 hours a week eventually to working 20 hours a week. And it was cool. And I coached all my kids' sports, and I started a sports league in our community. I was able to do a lot of other stuff, which was awesome. But then, when I got back to work, we went and opened four more stores within like 3 years. So the lesson there is, you know, plateaus are sometimes okay.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay to hit a plateau and enjoy your life and stop and smell the roses a little bit. But then sometimes it's time to go back to work as well. And when the recession hit in 2008, that's when we really went on our growth spree because there was a lot of opportunity. And there was a lot of auto repair shops that weren't necessarily hanging on. And there was a lot of landlords that would lease to automotive where they wouldn't otherwise. So you've got to seek out the opportunities when you can.
Going back to the time when you were playing golf, did you find that having that kind of plateau where you took time out for yourself and your family was helpful for your mindset?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the best things I ever did, you know, one of my, you know, I guess biggest accomplishments, if you want to put it that way, is I'm in a planned community where we had 5,000 families, but there was no organized sports league. And for me to be able to check out of work and start a sports league where now we have 2,000 kids a year participating in like 8 different sporting activities, you know, was awesome and allowed me to coach, you know, my son and daughter in all of their sports, baseball, football, soccer, and give back. So that was, you know, because you always got to do something. I wasn't just playing golf. And, right? You know? So, taking that time for your family and for yourself is super important. And, you know, you might want to think of these plateaus sometimes as opportunities, right? Because as middle-aged men, you know, you go through the midlife crisis and you get into a funk and you maybe get burnout. So those are all natural parts of life that you need to consider, right? And work through because life's not always easy. And, you know, you've got to – I don't know. It's a really interesting, you know, time of life because when you're 40 years old or 50 years old, whatever, and you'll think, well, you know, my life, you know, should have looked like this. Well, I don't have that. My life looks exactly the way I planned it. And I don't know how. I was very blessed. And I've put, you know, surrounded myself with amazing people. But I think that, you know, you've got to be, you know, take that time to be grateful and you know, give back and spend time with your family and all that.
I also would imagine that taking some time away from being so intensively involved in your businesses gives you time to reflect, strategize, and plan for the next deep dive.
You're absolutely right, because I'm in a kind of a weird spot right now. All right, I'm probably in a plateau, as you would say. You know, I sold my business 3 years ago. Very good business, 152 employees, amazing people. And now it's like, what's my next gig? So I'm taking that deep dive now and really launching my speaking and coaching career. And, you know, it's different, you know, for me than, you know, I could go up open an automotive repair shop. That's easy. So this is a little bit maybe outside the box for me.
Or maybe outside your comfort zone. Like, what's the next thing you're going to do to push yourself?
Right, because you've got to find purpose. And really, I lost a sense of purpose, which, interestingly enough, as excited as I was to sell my business for $16.5 million, you know, it was like, okay, well, now what? You know, and, you know, I think finding that sense of purpose, and especially when you have a major life event, is, you know, it's an interesting predicament for me now. And you know, I'm working my way through it. I'm loving life. Don't get me wrong, but it's just, it's very interesting. It's a unusual time.
You know, I think we all go through that. And I appreciate the fact that you're talking about it on this show, because so many of our listeners go through those kinds of periods where either we've achieved something that we wish had been better, or maybe we've achieved something that's been great, but now we're at the point where that chapter in our life is done. What's going to come next? Trying to figure that out is not easy, whether you've been wildly successful or not. We all go through that.
Absolutely. And that's exactly kind of my point, I think. And, you know, I mean, I would say, you know, that to most people, you know, I've kind of been wildly successful. But, you know, it's like, you know, it's kind of like imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah, it is.
Quite frankly, you know, it's like to anybody else, you know, all right, you've achieved all the success. But I think ultimately it's kind of like religion, you know. You know, what is your purpose? What is your ultimate purpose for the 30 years you have left on this earth? And I think I'm still trying to find that. I think everybody is. And I think that's a lifelong, you know, journey.
Matt, have you ever felt that you could achieve great success on your own?
Yes. That's probably not the answer you were expecting, because, again, you sent me the notes. And I think everybody, you know, has mentors and, you know, people that I've looked up to in my life, their lives. And I think for me, it's been my parents and my family. But I always had this conviction. Yannick Silver says this, really good friend of mine. Yannick's an amazing person. You know, it's like, have you ever felt like you are destined to achieve great things? I've always felt that way. It's a matter of self-confidence. And I think not enough people have that. That deep conviction that, you know, you are going to be successful, so no matter what. I mean, if you think otherwise, you're never going to achieve it. So, yeah, I've never not thought I was going to be successful. Does that sound arrogant?
No. Talk to me a little bit. I know I mentioned in the introduction that you have ADD, and I know in your book you spent a lot of time writing about that. How may that have played into the fact that you thought you were destined to achieve great success no matter what?
So that is a great question at a great time in the interview, because I was medically diagnosed with ADD when I was 11 years old. In 1978, my parents brought me to Massachusetts General Hospital, where I went through 2 days of rigorous testing and evaluation. On the third day, I'll never forget this, my parents, me, and three doctors in lab coats, you know, they brought us all in a room and said that I had some learning disabilities, slight dyslexia, and pretty acute ADD. Basically, they said I was going to have to work, you know, two or three times harder than anybody else to have any type of success in school or in life or certainly in business. And I never, you know, how would that make you feel when you're 11 years old, right? It was pretty intimidating, I guess.
I would be devastated.
Right. But I wasn't. I was just like, whatever. I don't know. Even at 11 years old, I was like, well, that's cool that I know. All right. It was good to know. It was good information to have. It was interesting data. Okay. But I never looked at that like, you know, they put me on Ritalin for a year. I got almost straight A's my seventh grade year, but they only put me on Ritalin for a year because they didn't know the long-term consequences. So eighth grade, I was back to my old ADD self, and I was really grateful that that the doctors and my parents took me off the Ritalin, because, you know, I always felt like ADD was my superpower, and it allowed me to cut through the crap, so to speak. It leaves me distracted and going in 100 different directions and, you know, at 100 miles an hour, but there's also a lot of great characteristics about it. It allows me to creatively problem solve. It allows me to see solutions where other people can't, to look over mountains and around turns. So everybody's got something, David, all right? You know, bipolar, manic depressant, ADD, obsessive compulsive disorder, you know, whatever.
We all have unique gifts.
We all have unique gifts. So you've got to, what, you know what it was, I think, to me, at least it allowed me to be aware. Allowed me to be aware of what my deficits were and what my superpowers were. And it was really kind of cool looking back on it. I mean, obviously at 11 years old, I didn't get it at the time. But what I did do is I didn't let it get the best of me, you know. And, you know, my parents were superheroes. So ADD is my superpower, man. And you've got to, for all of its gifts, it's got weaknesses as well. And you got to surround yourself with people that are good at things that you're not.
Well, I think that is actually kind of the crux of the issue, which is understanding what your unique gifts are and then surrounding yourself with people who have complementary gifts.
That's exactly right. And, you know, my best and highest use isn't sitting in an office reading a 47-page contract from an attorney, you know? So, you know, I need somebody to maybe interpret that and give me the highlights and work our way through it. My best and highest use is out in the field motivating people and making sure policies and procedures and, you know, are being followed and motivating teams and serving the customer. And that's a great gift, you know, when you can serve somebody else.
What have been some examples of some of the great teams that you've led? What kinds of characteristics have the people had?
Well, you know, everybody that I consider great, like from the artisan technician, I'm having my house remodeled right now, right? This is a good example. And this guy's Vic from Poland, and he's like an old world artisan, all right? My house isn't getting done the fastest. It's not getting done necessarily in my timeline. But I went over there. I was out of the country for a couple of days. And I went over there after a week and looked at it. And just like the amazing attention to detail. So the people that really take pride in what they do and really kind of serve others and give the gift of their workmanship, I've always respected. Because I was never a technician, for instance, in automotive field, right? I was a manager and a sales guy and kind of the liaison between the front of the house and the back of the house. But the guys that I always looked up to were the craftsmen, you know, because I had some of the best technicians in the country, Ferrari technicians, and we did worked on a lot of really cool cars. And so the craftsman is the person that I looked up to, I think, the most.
And what have been some of your keys to being able to find those kind of great people?
You pay them well. You treat them well. We were never like price competitive. We charged we were the most expensive guy in town. But I also paid my guys. I mean, I had technicians making $150,000 a year. And so we took really good care of them. You know, we took care of them and their families, and that was very rewarding. You know, so people actually sought us out, and if you can be that type of employer, that's like, you know, that's just really a cool thing.
How did you realize that it was important to be that kind of employer where you really took care of your people internally and you were able to set yourself apart from the competition and not be seen as a commodity, but you were seen as a valuable resource where having the lowest price was not the primary marketing tactic?
Well, we had to. So I started Curry's Auto Service on $103,000 and 13 credit cards. So we were all in and in the back of a terrible industrial park with no visibility and just 4 parking spots. So we were totally all in and, you know, we just had our second child. And, you know, in order to be the best, or in order to compete on any level, we bought the best equipment and we hired the best people. And I knew who the best people were and I paid them the most. So I really took a chance on that. And that was always the mindset moving forward, is hire the best people, pay the most money, you know, take care of their families, because, you know, your employees want, you know, peace of mind that they're taken care of and they work in a great place. And, you know, it's not all, you know, butterflies and roses, of course, but If you can help your employees achieve their goals and, you know, make sure that their families are taken care of, you know, at a higher level than anybody else, you're going to have people flock to you. And that's what we had.
I think that's a great lesson for everybody listening to this podcast. And I think that's a great lesson for anybody in business.
You know, anybody can compete on price, but that's not where you want to be. And what we did, and we had, at Curry's Auto Service, we competed at, we worked in high-end BMW, Porsche, Mercedes, high-end European and import vehicles and exotics. And, we worked on everything. We worked on Fords and Dodges as well. But, our niche was a high-end customer. You know, because anybody can do a $9 oil change, $9.95 oil change. But it's not where we wanted to be. We wanted to be, serving at a higher level. And I think anybody in business, that's really what you want.
That's great. Matt, whom do you know personally who is doing really remarkable work?
Ken Loesch is doing some remarkable stuff. Ken's a friend of mine out in Phoenix, and he he's found a way to recapture, the burn-off from oil wells, and he captures that burn-off and he recycles that energy to run the camps, and then he's got another technology where he's totally taking the fuel injectors of vehicles of 18-wheelers, and he can retools the fuel injectors so they can run off of natural gas and achieve, instead of like $3 a gallon, they're down to 51 cents a gallon. So Ken Loesch in Phoenix, Arizona is doing some remarkable stuff.
That's great. I know you talked a little bit earlier about the fact that you had just sold your company, but what are some of the things that you are working on, and how can listeners learn more about you?
So I'm working on leveraging my book and my 30 years of entrepreneurship into speaking and coaching. I've already coached four different companies this year and had increases in sales already of $500,000. So speaking and sharing my, hopefully my unique message and perspective. And yeah, and then, who knows, I might even do it again. I might even open up another couple auto repair shops just because I love the business. So, but speaking and coaching are my primary gigs these days.
And how can listeners learn more about you?
They can go to adashofcurry.com, adashofcurry, because that's all you need. It's just a little dash.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking a lot about entrepreneurship, the ups and downs, how you smash a plateau, and how you use your unique gifts to really conquer the world. So thanks so much. My guest today has been entrepreneur and auto industry expert Matt Curry. Thank you again, Matt, for joining us. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. What has your experience been getting help when you've hit a plateau? What would you like to learn through this podcast that would give you the support you need? Let's continue the discussion. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter. And please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious, and I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.